Welcome to the Baseball Insiders. Happy Friday. I am Adam Weinrib, joined as always by FanSided's MLB insider Robert Murray as we enter the weekend. And I know we have made it a running joke on recent shows that we have a Mets dysfunction section and we have to talk about them. We have to talk about all the garbage going on in there. Will they, won't they? I guess they won't with Carlos Mendoza and the Red Sox dysfunction and the Phillies mess. And I pledge to do a little bit better. So we're going to change things up today. We're going to talk about teams that are good. I know it's weird, but it's the flip side of the trade deadline. Teams that are already in a great position and need to add. How do they get better? How do they sustain this momentum? Robert and I are going to be breaking down the hottest teams in the game right now and what their next moves should be. And of course, I can't do that without input from Robert Murray. Robert, welcome to the show. Happy Friday. Happy weekend. Let's roll.
Let's get after it, baby. This has felt like we were talking about it before the show. Like yesterday felt very much like Friday. I think it's been a long week for all of us, but we're talking baseball. Life is good. Like it couldn't be better at the moment, except if you're the New York Mets or any of these teams who are really struggling. So I am anxious to dive into the stuff that's actually positive for a change. So this shall be a very fun show. I got plenty of thoughts, maybe some stuff here in the notebook here as well. So that'll be exciting. But Adam Weinrib, how is it going? Happy Friday.
Happy Friday. Yeah, what's good could be better, could still be improved. We're going to get into that and how it's possible. We appreciate everyone joining us again every Monday, Wednesday, Friday. If you're new to the Baseball Insiders on YouTube, Friday evenings, Monday and Wednesday, 3:30 Eastern, 3 p.m. Eastern live streams. Join us in the Discord between shows as well on Thursday afternoons at the All-Star tier for our All-Stars. Robert does a private Q&A in that Discord channel, so you're going to want to become a member of the YouTube channel. That'll get you access. Remember to join at the All-Star tier if you want the private Q&A. And twice per week, the Baseball Insiders newsletter directly to your inbox. All you have to do to subscribe, you can go to fansided.com/newsletters. If you really want to, you can give them a page view there. I don't know how valuable that page view is, but what you could do instead is just scan this right at the bottom of the screen and subscribe to that newsletter. Robert opens his notebook on Tuesdays. FanSided's MLB staff writers follow behind with great insight, detail, goofball stuff every Tuesday and Thursday directly to your inbox. Very easy to get. Again, that QR code is right at the bottom of the screen. If you're listening on the audio feed, you might be the kind of person who goes to fansided.com/newsletters to fill that out. Because again, no QR code for you in your favorite podcast platform. Also, the Prospect Show Tuesdays featuring me and Eric Cole on the very same network. So please go ahead and do all of those things. But let's get into it. Let's get into success. We do so much talking about these horrific Mets, Phillies, and Red Sox early trends that we got to do the flip side now. I want to go through the five hottest teams in the league. The five teams that are making the most noise, racking up the most wins early. And I would love for you to pick a trade deadline target or a decision that they must make next in order to keep that hot streak going, keep the momentum rolling. Does that sound good?
No, yeah, let's do it. Let's get after it. I'm excited.
What if you said no? Then what do I do for the rest of the show?
I thought about saying no, but I want to be on my best behavior today. So that's, you know what? I'm just like, you know what? Let's play nice today. How about that?
Robert says no, we've got 23 minutes left, and I pivot right back to talking about the Mets and their 50 feet of crap. No, let's talk about teams that are good and could be better, because guess what? We all know there is no trophy for being very good on May 1st. In fact, you have to do more work, more heavy lifting, and first up, the hottest team in baseball. And I know that, look, if we had printed this outline preseason, everyone would be saying, here comes the Dodgers. But actually, I'm going to call the Braves 1 degree hotter on that Scoville scale. So the Atlanta Braves have run out to a massive lead in the NL East, chased by the Marlins, not the Phillies and Mets, and the Washington Nationals, who are near 500. What do the Braves have to do to maintain what they've got going on early?
Yeah, I would say they were probably the most pleasant surprise here in baseball so far. And they are a team where you ask me preseason, and I think you ask a lot of other people preseason, they had a lot of questions about Atlanta, specifically on the pitching side. I was very strongly for them getting Lucas Giolito. And so far, they're one of the best teams in baseball. Like, they have a very strong grasp on that entire division so far. And some of the moves that they did make, but also didn't make. Like, the one that really stood out to me was keeping Ozzie Albies. There was a lot of calls for them to part ways this offseason. I know that was something that was said both locally in Atlanta, but also like nationally as well. He was coming off of a really down season there in Atlanta, and he's been one of their most productive players. You got Matt Olson, you got Michael Harris, you got Drake Baldwin. Like, there's a bunch of different guys here with Atlanta who have really showed out and did their thing. I do expect Alex Anthopoulos to be aggressive at the deadline. I think that's something that he always is setting out to do, especially when his team is in contention. And that's also why he didn't sell off some of their big stars at the deadline last year, because there was a lot of speculation about Chris Sale, about Ronald Acuna Jr., which, I mean, that was baseless. They were never going to trade him or trade any of those guys because they wanted a chance to compete this year. And lo and behold, here they are now. But I think the biggest thing that they can do is getting Austin Riley back on track. He has not been the same player that he once was. I don't know if injuries are a factor. I don't necessarily know what's going on there. But yeah, like, and Anthopoulos can go out and make a trade or two at the deadline. I expect him to do so. But the biggest thing that they can do is get Riley back on track, because if they do, that is a team that becomes even more dangerous, gets an all-star caliber player back in their lineup and performing at a high level. So I think that's got to be their top priority internally.
The Fed's out of options. Rate cuts, money printing, balance sheet reversals. They call it policy, but it's really panic. This is in-game economics, where hope replaces discipline and the illusion of control finally breaks. They're not cutting rates because things are strong. They're cutting because the system is cracking. Inflation's eating savings. The labor market's stalling. Confidence in the dollar is fading fast. For decades, the Fed built a house of paper. Now they're striking the match that could burn it all down, leaving you to pay the price. When's the last time you actually held the wealth you've spent your life working for? My friends at Noble Gold Investments have been helping Americans move from paper wealth into real tangible assets. Numbers on a screen can disappear, but physical gold and silver, they've outlasted every crisis in history. Visit NobleGoldInvestments.com and get your free wealth protection kit today. That's NobleGoldInvestments.com for your free wealth protection kit. Discover how simple it is to protect your future.
Past performance may not be indicative of future results. Investing in precious metals, including gold, involves risks. Consult with your tax attorney or financial professional before making an investment decision.
Yeah, there are just some struggles that seem like they're either injuries or they're cosmic nonsense. So you can't explain why Austin Riley took that step back, but you'd much rather he do it during a period where the Braves are getting fat on their opponents and merely need to keep up rather than reinvent the wheel. So Riley come back and the Braves adding at the deadline and reinforcing that rotation that we all thought was a trouble spot to start the season and hasn't quite been yet would be in their best interest, but they are in pole position, although the Don Mattingly Phillies, of course, can't lose. So if the Phillies go undefeated for the rest of the year, the Braves might be in trouble. Otherwise, they do seem like they are operating from a position of strength. Now, didn't take me long to get to the Dodgers because damn it, they're good again. What do they need to do to avoid some variety of summer swoon and keep attention off Kyle Tucker? I'll just throw that out there in that, like, we know Tucker went to the Dodgers in part because they offered him a ridiculously rich contract and in part because the Dodgers are good to their people and gave him a little bit of cover after a year in Chicago where he was the lightning rod. You can go ahead and be all-star Kyle Tucker, not all eyes on you, Kyle Tucker. And he's been league average or a little worse offensively so far. Hasn't mattered all that much, but the more eyes off him, the better. I think we know that based on the way last year unfolded. What else did the Dodgers have to do to keep this pace up or improve it? Because I'm not honestly sure if they're where they want to be right now.
No, they're a team that once it gets late in the season or comes the postseason time, I expect all those guys to turn it on and they're just going to go to a different level. It's something I've thought about plenty, where it's like the team is so dominant and so good and so talented that I've always wondered if they can end up getting bored during the regular season. Like, I've had people push back against that. Actually, I think even Tom Verducci ended up he kind of pushed back against that notion in saying that when you have guys like Mookie Betts and Shohei and some of those leaders that they have in that clubhouse, it makes it very hard for that team to feel stagnant on the inside because they're always pushing to try to get their teammates better. But the thing that stands out to me that they could probably improve on here is somehow still going to be the bullpen. Edwin Diaz is a guy who they signed. They gave him big money, where they went into that last offseason looking to try to end up getting one of these like better closers on a very short-term deal, maybe like a 1 year, maybe a 2 year. But when the opportunity to sign Diaz came about, they stretched past their limit, or they went into an uncomfortable range because they viewed him as a really unique opportunity. And now he's hurt already. He's sidelined for a while. So I think if you can add to the bullpen and maybe somehow also get another starting pitcher or two, because we've seen the Dodgers in years past where they've had injuries really impact their rotation. They've survived it somehow. Dave Roberts has done a very nice job of that despite some external criticism. But I think adding to the bullpen or adding to the pitching depth overall and also trying to figure out what exactly you have in Roky Sasaki. Is he going to be someone that you can rely on? Is he going to be someone you can't rely on? I think that's got to be something that they really need to figure out here during the season. And this can end up, make or break is a pretty dangerous phrase, but it kind of feels like a make or break season for Roky Sasaki, because I don't necessarily know what they have there quite yet.
Yeah, I wasn't expecting to have this much uncertainty. Certainly when they brought him over, it seemed like a developmental project, but he picked a team specifically around who knows the secret sauce to my fastball, who can fix this. And so far the solution is, I don't know, I guess it might work out of the bullpen for like 3 weeks and then never again get back to us. The Dodgers need to figure out what they have there, but they have so much talent and so much focus, so much dynastic focus, that they can take the foot off the gas pedal a little during the summer, and it's not the end of days. That said, you want to keep reinforcing, and you will, and you should. You don't have to worry about that.
Also, too, the other part of this, too, that's been really like good for the Dodgers here is their inexpensive players really balling out this season. Like Andy Pages, been great, but also Dalton Rushing, like not the most famous guy among like other fan bases and other teams, but like he's balling, like he's doing great. So like, if obviously like the Shohei's and the Mookie Betts, the Freddie Freeman's, like those guys obviously get the press and like they deserve it, but it's the under the radar guys for that team that really drive the bus and like can take that team to a different level. And so far they've really shown out, and if they continue that team becomes even more dangerous, which is scary enough. And thank goodness I don't have to play against them, because that would not go very well.
Yeah, Dalton Rushing is making a name for himself, and the numbers should be doing all the talking. If you look, they're actually crazy. But yeah, there's a lot more going on there than just the performance on the field, I would say. Look, maybe a young player taking advantage of his first real time in the spotlight to make some of the wrong ripples, but also, they're getting a ton of value from what is at this point not a player who they intended to factor in large part to their plans. But next time he sees Nico Horner, I'm not sure he's going to be thrilled by the way that relationship plays out. Now, we know the Dodgers will tinker. I guess that it took us three teams to get to the American League, and guess what? There's only one American League team in this mix right now, because the rest of the AL is 16-15. It's every single American League team is 500, essentially, except for the New York Yankees, who have managed to – they're hoping to avoid a June swoon for like the fifth straight year. They swooned in April already. They went 2-7 for a stretch. They almost went 0-1. It was just Jordan Romano who kept them from a 9-game losing streak twice. But they started off 7-1, got ice cold, now 20-11 entering the weekend. And it's an odd way that they're doing this. The bullpen did not get added to this offseason, but is holding its own for now. Clearly undermanned, though. The bottom of the lineup not really performing. The starting rotation has just been so absurd that they're moving along in the way that they intended to. But without this, we're not having those boom or bust offense conversations, because the offense isn't really doing all that much. So when you watch the Yankees, what do you think about their next steps? And what do you think Brian Cashman has his eyes on this summer?
So I told our lovely producer, Joanne, before the show that I was going to pull a reverse Uno card. And I'm throwing it right back to you, Adam, because you are a Yankees guy. You watch him on a daily basis. If you were Brian Cashman, if you were that team, what would you do to improve that team and get it to the next level?
I think this is the first time in a long time that I don't have to look at starting pitching at all, which is crazy. And I know people will throw, and I will agree that you can never have too much, of course, but I think they have more that hasn't been tapped yet. Like they have Carlos Lagrange at AAA. They have Carlos Rodon and Gerrit Cole coming back at some point. So no, you can't have too much starting pitching, but given that they do need to redirect bullpen trade resources to the bullpen, I wouldn't even think about starters when you already have the Lagrange card that you can play at the minor league level, plus Luis Gil, plus Elmer Rodriguez, and Ryan Weather's probably going to get squeezed into a bullpen role at some point. You definitely have overflow there. Don't worry about getting a depth starter, especially because the prices always go crazy for rentals and more at the deadline. Bullpen is a necessity, an eighth inning guy that you can trust. They won a series in Texas this week, and the two wins were both tight games. One of them, they used Tim Hill in the eighth inning. Now, I love Tim Hill. I love Tim Hill more than most people in my family. He is not an eighth inning guy. He's not a setup. Just because he can do it doesn't mean he should do it. And Camilo Doval has been just as skittish this year as he was last year in the small sample when he came over. Brett Hedrick has been overused as the seventh inning guy. He's been great, but you know, how many more does Brett Hedrick make 65, 70, 75 appearances this year? Or can we reinforce that? Some of it's going to come from the starters going to the bullpen. Some of it might come from a guy like LeGrande or a guy like Yovani Cruz, who they stole from the Red Sox minor league system, coming up and throwing 100. They're going to get internal reinforcements there too, but a bona fide eighth inning guy who you can trust. I wish David Robertson had not retired. This would be a great fit for David Robertson, but just some setup man who you know is going to be marked up in price a little bit at the deadline, but who you just know you can pencil in a situation like that. All relievers are volatile, but I'm just talking about a slightly less volatile reliever. Minimize it a little bit. And then, look, the lineup is overflowing a little bit. I think it depends on injury issues, what happens with Jason Dominguez, what happens with Giancarlo Stanton, where you do need to plug and play somebody, because right now it's constructed pretty well. If you need to pull the plug on Ryan McMahon, does George Lombard Jr. step up and become a guy you can plug in there? Or do you need to go ahead and hit the trade market again? So it's bullpen A number one for me. Figure out where the lineup is, reinforce it with a bat, depends on what's available, but the rotation I wouldn't touch.
No, and also too, like I'll ask you this. Do you, once you get Gerrit Cole back, once you get Carlos Rodon, do you end up using some of that pitching depth in the starting rotation, move it to the bullpen, or do you try to do maybe like a player for player trade where you end up throwing one of those starting pitchers and try to use it to get a bat? I'm wondering what you think here.
Yeah, I think if like someone is interested in unlocking Luis Gil, you do a player for player. You don't even think about it. Nope. Other than that, I would, knowing that Hedrick has all these miles on his arm, I would try to start coaxing Ryan Weathers into a bullpen role instead of trading him. But obviously, I think all must be on the table. And that includes Rodriguez at AAA, as you know, just got called up. Theoretically, he's going to get two big league starts, I think, before Rodon comes back. If someone is interested in him as a centerpiece, you entertain it. Clark Schmidt is coming back too. Like by end of year, it'll be a while, but if somebody's interested in Clark before, you know, he hits free agency, you got to consider that. You got to consider everything.
No, because we've seen the Yankees do it before. I remember it was a few years ago at this point when they traded Jordan Montgomery straight up for Harrison Bader. Like that was a crazy trade. I mean, Cashman has a history of doing it. Maybe they can get creative or something. But I think this deadline, obviously we got plenty of time yet, but this could end up being, with the Phillies struggling, with the Mets struggling, with all these teams, throw the Giants in there as well. This could end up being a very unique deadline with a lot of big market teams possibly. So they're not there yet. I want to clarify that before the aggregators come after me, but still, like, that could be something we definitely have to watch over the next few months here.
Now, with all these big market teams battling, we now turn to the leaders of the NL Central and the Cincinnati Reds. They're going to have to dance with some big market teams if they want to reinforce. I can't believe that the Pirates just did what they did against the Cardinals to dip out of the, you know, playoff picture momentarily. The Brewers are still lurking. We know they're better than they've shown, but the Reds are the team that we have to talk about here. What do they need to remain as hot as they've been? They've been a little bit of a two-man offense. Ellie De La Cruz has continued to level up. But what does Cincinnati need to keep this pace?
Yeah, I mean, you said it right away. Ellie De La Cruz has been the guy for them that just really, like, he's a superstar level player. There's a reason why they offered him a record-setting contract as far as the Reds organization goes. Didn't get anywhere, as is the case typically with a Scott Boras client, but they have Sal Stewart. They have Nathaniel Lau. They have all sorts of different guys who have really stepped up on offense, and it's made them one of the better offenses in the National League so far. But the questions that I have with that team pertain to the starting pitching side. And there's going to be answers that come internally here when Hunter Green comes back. Started the season on the injured list, should be starting to throw bullpens here like within the next few weeks is what the indications are. And if you can come back and maybe even before the halfway point of the regular season, that'd be a big boost to that rotation overall. But if I'm that front office, I really go out there and I target getting another starting pitcher, maybe another one on top of that as well, because I think having depth is going to be something that's super important for them. But they're a team that definitely feels like it's still ascending here for sure. You were all over them last season when it came to the Reds. You were like, that's my sneaky team to make the postseason. I mean, shoot, you had the Reds last year. Now you got the Marlins this year. I mean, shoot, you might be two for two over here, Adam. So, but I love what the Reds are building here. I think they have a really strong core in place. And if they can end up adding to it while not really decimating their future long term, I think that'd be something that would really behoove them. So, yeah, they're definitely a team on the rise, and that's a team that should be followed very closely here in the National League going forward.
I might blow everyone's mind. I might not, but just bringing the two segments together in one piece, the Yankees and Reds matched up on a player for player with Fernando Cruz for Jose Trevino last winter. And they also, the Reds were the ones to watch what Frankie Montas did in New York, which wasn't all that much, and say, we still believe in that guy. So it does seem like they target similar players to who Brian Cashman targets. I don't know what they see in Luis Gil. I don't know if they see something unlockable, but I mean, if they need pitching reinforcements and the Yankees still need the Yankees need a fourth outfielder, the Yankees need an infield option, like a third base option. Where's Noelvi Marte on that depth chart? Like, are there dudes, if the Yankees were to do heel plus a prospect of renown, like a real guy for Marte or for someone, you know, at towards the top of the Reds farm in the infield? I don't know.
No, it's a good thought. I also would wonder what, like, let's say Gino Suarez, what his bat would look like in Yankee Stadium in a, well, it wouldn't be on a, like a full season basis, but like a half a season, he could end up hitting a lot of homers. So, I mean, there's a couple of different ways it can end up going about that thing. I like how I ended up mentioning Nathaniel Lau over Gino Suarez before, where Suarez is making like $15 million a year versus, what was it, like a, was it a fringe major league contract or was it a minor league contract that they ended up getting?
Yeah, I think it was a minor league pack during spring training.
No, I mean, it's a great move by the Reds. Like they obviously can't spend like the big dollars that some of these big market teams can. But still, like, they got some value there, and I give them a ton of credit. So yeah, I'm all aboard the Reds trade. Basically everyone in the National League Central at this point, whether it's, all five of the teams at this point, I'm really kind of liking what they're doing here. So that's a fun little division there. It's scrappy.
It's scrappy. It really is. And look, the Cubs could easily be in this conversation after another hot week. I'm just glad we got to talk about the Reds today. And look, we're doubling up on a division to close this because the hottest team in the NL that doesn't get it a lot of the credit that it deserves is the San Diego Padres, who started this, you know, season as a semi also ran, but are right up there with the Dodgers as they have been during their best years in the past. Lucas Giolito is on the way. Giolito watch has ended. He will be a San Diego Padre at some point. What do they need to do to keep the foot on the gas pedal midseason? And you know they have the right executive in place to do it.
Oh yeah, there's no better executive come trade deadline time than AJ Preller. And this ownership change, when it eventually takes shape and takes effect, can end up having a really big impact on this team, where I think Preller is no longer going to end up having that, where he's going to have a lot more flexibility going forward. And what exactly that could look like at the deadline, I'm not necessarily sure. But it would be very fun to see Preller not like handcuffed at the deadline, where he can pursue all these big name guys. And he even did so last year, and he found a way to be very creative with it. It felt like every single trade that was coming across, or like at least half of them, were all Padres related. And they tried for some other stuff too. Like Emmanuel Clase was definitely a player that they really liked. Steven Kwan was a player that they really liked. So could they revisit something for Kwan? Could they end up revisiting something that like a big name trade at the deadline here? And I also think John Heyman, and like, this is taking a pretty further or pretty deep step out here, looking in the offseason now. Could they end up being one of those teams that goes after Tarik Skubal? We've talked about the Dodgers. We've talked about the Mets when it comes to Skubal. But Preller loves elite players, and he always is going after pitching. If you can somehow get in the conversation for Skubal, and let's say Preller ends up pulling that off, that really narrows the gap between them and the Dodgers. It gives them somebody who, let's say you're going into a winner-take-all game and you can put out Tarik Skubal, he can beat anybody. And you would have to feel very good about your chances, especially with that lineup. So I think we're going to have a very fun Preller season at the deadline, and especially in the offseason before the lockout. And I think that's a really exciting thing here for baseball because, yeah, all bets might be off.
One final shout out. Again, one American League team in my top five, but I didn't want to ignore the pesky ass Rays, who are doing some deeply strange voodoo in the American League East. I mean, do we believe in the upstart Rays? Do they have what it takes to change the timeline and contend a little bit this year? And if so, or if not, what do they need to do to stay at the atop the wild card mountain or even make noise in the East?
Yeah. Like when it comes to the Rays, you can never really expect them to go out and do anything too crazy, but they have some really strong, fun young pieces over here. Obviously like Junior Caminero ends up getting all the buzz there for sure. But Chandler Simpson has really turned it on. Like, people always considered him more of like a base stealing guy, which obviously he has. He's been like great at doing that, but he's hitting over 300 this season. He looks like a totally different player there. They got some other young pieces there. Do they go out and improve the bullpen, where Griffin Jacks hasn't necessarily been the player that they were hoping for when they made that big trade with the Twins? And Taj Bradley looks like a totally revitalized player in Minnesota. So I think maybe the bullpen can end up being something. But one thing that Eric Neander always does is he's finds ways to be creative, where it's maybe subtracting off of the major league roster to end up improving a different aspect of it. I hope for his sake that he doesn't end up having to do that, where he can just keep the major league roster intact while also bringing in some outside talent. So I'm very high on what they have there. They always find a way to exceed expectations. I know it's been rocky here in recent years, but still, like, I really like what they have going there. And if these young players continue to ascend, that would be very good. But also, like, the junior Caminero extension part, that's got to be looming over their heads. It's not going to be happening now. Does it happen in this offseason? Does it happen in the offseason after that? But that's the big domino for them. And if they can sign him long term, then their future is going to be very bright.
Anything else in the notebook before we sign off?
Yeah, there's been a lot of buzz about the Mets possibly being the next team to fire their manager. And we had David Stearns come out and talk to Anthony DiComo today and say that the Mets are not considering a change, that Mendoza is safe. And I think that's exactly the right thing to do here. And I saw Joel Sherman, I believe, say that this is something that the Mets needed to go out and do, or if they just end up letting go of Mendoza, like one of those two options there, but they back their manager. I think that's going to have taken some of the pressure off of that clubhouse. That seems like it's really pressing at the moment. Luke Weaver went out of his way and really said some like strong words. Like, it was like, when I say strong words, it was like well-articulated, just an overall grasp on what's happening in that Mets locker room. And it just feels like they're pressing overall. So this should help. And if there's ever a moment for this team to get hot and get back on track, it's got to be now. Otherwise, these concerns, these whispers, or shoot, these shouts at this point are only going to grow louder.
Will the Mets be in our next discussion of the hottest teams? That is for them to decide. We appreciate everyone joining us here on the Baseball Insiders. Catch us again next week, next Monday, right here on YouTube or your favorite podcast platform.